Hi, good morning, everybody. I'm Chris Schultz. Today we're going to talk about credential handlers in Tomcat, which is a feature that's somewhat new, depending on exactly what version you were on. You may not have heard of these before, or you may have been here last year and sat through the same talk. I've updated it slightly. There have been a lot of password security failures over the last couple of years. I didn't look too hard at 2016 to find out very many of them, but occasionally you'll see an online service that gets knocked over or hacked or, you know, releases the account credentials for 500 million users. And what often happens is you find out the dirty little secrets of these services, like that they've been keeping your password in plain text or trivially hashing it with SHA-1 or MD5, which these days is just simply not enough. Even the ones that happen more recently have either completely failed or partially failed, and one of them, it's actually kind of funny for many reasons, is the Ashley Madison one, where they attempted to very securely store the passwords using bcrypt format, which is great, but then right next to it they also had the MD5 hash of the same password. So the fact that they were using bcrypt, they could probably tell everyone, oh yes, we use this great algorithm, but for some backward compatible reasons we're also using MD5. So that was kind of a mistake. The reasons why these things are not a good idea is a little bit out of scope for this presentation, but if you're curious, I'm happy to talk to you afterwards about it. So the reason that these things fail are because they're either plain or clear text, they use those terms interchangeably, often rolling one's own security, which is never a good idea. If you're not using standard, well-known algorithms for mutating your passwords, you're probably doing it wrong. The reasons that happens is because sometimes the existing tools are not convenient to work with. Things like a simple hash are easy to do. Things like more complicated hashes, if you want to set up PBKDF2 or something like that, you actually need to understand how it's supposed to work in order to use it. And then there's also the NIH syndrome, which is the not invented here syndrome. Everybody wants to write their own code so they know that all how it works, and maybe they want it to be proprietary or something like that. Using known, poor, or outdated algorithms. There's nothing inherently wrong with MD5 or SHA-1, but the fact that you can pre-compute a SHA-1, an MD5 hash for virtually every password that could ever possibly be used and then look it up in a giant Lucene. Actually, it doesn't even need to be something as complicated in Lucene. It's literally a string match. Is not good. So then there are completely inappropriate algorithms like XORing your password with some trivial thing consistently. Doing these kinds of practices by the servers are putting your users at risk. Often, even if they aren't using your application. So this is different than application security because this is not necessarily about protecting the service from break-in. It's after the service has been broken into, the user's security, not just on one site, but possibly other sites, it becomes a problem. What I'm going to be talking about today really only protects the user database, not keeping people from brute forcing the password from outside. I'm not keeping people from finding vulnerabilities in your software or anything like that. This is literally just, if there is a breach of your password database, how can you protect your users from, well, your own mistakes? Generally speaking, the container should be protecting the application from the users, and the application should be protecting the data from the users, and these techniques will actually protect the users from a breach that actually has nothing to do with the application. The user database is pretty important even outside the service. I mentioned lateral attacks here. If your users are like most users, they will use the same password with all services. So if they are using a banking application and they're using your application and they're using Twitter and they're using Facebook or whatever, and you get breached, someone might use the password that they discover from your password database to go and get seemingly authenticated access or authorized access to their account somewhere else. So this is damage that can go beyond your own application. Oh, and then also, like, admins, there's no reason for an admin to ever have a user's password for the same reason. So even if you don't suffer a breach, if you have a disgruntled administrator that just wants to grab somebody's password and then try that password on all other services they can think of, it's a good way of protecting yourself, your own business against a rogue employee. And if you think your database isn't going to be stolen, just ask any of these well-funded services whether or not they thought their password databases were going to be stolen. So usually the user database is going to contain all of these kinds of fields. And when I say credentials, I'm talking about essentially passwords. Technically it includes the username as well, but the username is really not considered secure in any way. It's the secret is the password. I already covered that. So actually I did a scan of some of the user databases that were published, and these are not examples from there, but people often come up with really dumb passwords, usually including the word password or something like that. And they will reuse these things across sites. It also means that not only can your password database breach affect a bank, but vice versa. So you can only control what's going on in your own application, but it's really important that you understand why these things are worth protecting. So to attack a user database, discovering a password that's clear text is not difficult at all. Simple hashing algorithms like MD5 I mentioned earlier, you can use a rainbow table, which is just a giant pre-generated list of hashes for, there's a hash for A, and there's a hash for AA, and there's a hash for AAA, and there's a hash for AAAA, and you can just do that forever, and you can do it on a commodity computer. You can generate all 32 character passwords and just look them up. They exist online. In fact, if you do a Google for MD5 reverse hash, you could probably take any hash that you could find in the user database, either in a public one, or if you happen to be using that algorithm in your own application, you could just plug it in there and boom, you'll get the password. Then there are salted hashes, which are a little bit more difficult. That actually usually prevents rainbow tables and does require brute force. But then there are the better algorithms, which are down here, the key derivation algorithm. So PBKDF stands for, the KDF is a key derivation function. And basically what it does is a number of different mutations of the password, which require time, CPU time, and memory. And bcrypt, in fact, was designed specifically to take up as much time as possible. There is an algorithm called scrypt, which I considered talking about when I first built this presentation. And the idea with scrypt was to be the successor to bcrypt, and its intention was to not only take up as much CPU time as possible, but also take up a lot of memory, because one of the techniques that are used to crack passwords is to use GPUs, which are very fast. And the good thing about GPUs is they generally don't have access to very much memory comparatively. So the scrypt algorithm was intended to require like enormous amounts of memory, like megabytes of memory, which doesn't sound like a lot, but for computing a password or for mutating a password, that's a lot. And unfortunately, it did not have the characteristics that were intended. So the scrypt project is essentially dead. So if anybody was trying to decide what they wanted to do, maybe let scrypt go and stick with either bcrypt or PBKDF2. PBKDF2 is one of the NIST algorithms that I think is approved for things like PCI DSS and FIPS 140 and things like that. So you guys have regulatory requirements. Probably stick with PBKDF. Would like to point out that determined adversaries are probably going to break your stuff. So this is all about best effort. just take all this with a grain of salt. This is the best that the security community has to offer right now. If you have like a DoD requirement or something like, or whatever it happens to be in your country of origin, then you may need to look up additional materials to decide how you're supposed to be doing these things. So the best strategy is to use the highest security available to you in all cases, rather than making some of the mistakes that I mentioned earlier, like rolling your own security. So key derivation algorithms are difficult by design. They are intended to be hard problems, either algorithmically or memory-wise, and things like that. And message digest hashing algorithms were intended to be very fast. They're supposed to be used for signatures and things that you want to do a lot. And they were designed to be implementable very quickly. That's why lots of them are done in hardware. That's why pure message digest, like MD5, the SHA family of functions, they're actually not really great choices for password mutation and storage in a database. You really want to use a key derivation algorithm. I mentioned PBKDF2 and bcrypt before. I'll just leave that up on the screen for a second in case you want to browse through that. I think I mentioned all of this. It is worth pointing out that bcrypt does have an open source origin, which may resonate for a lot of our audience today. Both of these, I should have put it on the slide here. Both of these can be tuned to be expensive. It's not that PBKDF is not tunable. And none of them have any known or published weaknesses, as far as I know. So the historical Tomcat support for password storage has not been great. We would support anything that the standard Java message digest class would support. So any plain old hashing algorithm. We didn't support salts, we didn't support iterations, there were no third-party plugins. If you wanted to do it yourself, you had to do a lot of things. You had to build a custom realm, and a custom realm had all kinds of other baggage associated with it, and it was just really a pain in the neck. And unfortunately, these things essentially steered people towards either using a third-party solution, like a lot of people use Spring Security, or towards rolling their own algorithms or doing the security themselves. And as I mentioned earlier, all of those things are a bad idea. So this is what the diagram of the various class extensions looks like in previous Tomcat releases. So there's a basic realm, there's a whatever realm, and then if you wanted to do a custom realm that did something that was different from what Tomcat could provide out of the box, you had to implement this, but then you had to choose, well, do I want to do JNDI? Do I want to use DataSource? Do I want to use JDBC? Do I want to use, these days you could do JASPIC or whatever it happened to be. You had to pick the one that you wanted. You couldn't support any arbitrary realm with your password mutation customization. So the modern Tomcat support, we still support everything we used to support, and the configuration is still the same. You have some more options because we can do salting and iterations if you'd like to do that. I honestly have mixed feelings about that because I would prefer that people steer towards algorithms that have these types of things built into them rather than asking users, you guys, to configure them manually, because how do you know how many iterations you should use? How do you know how big your salt should be? That kind of thing. But what we did was we added a pluggable credential handler interface, and that means that you can do anything you want. We have included, bundled with Tomcat is the PBKDF2 credential handler, if it's supported by the JVM. And I'm sorry, I don't know off the top of my head how far back you have to go to find a JVM that's not supported. Where PBKDF2 is not supported. I'm sure it's supported in Java 7 and later, probably 6 and later, and probably earlier versions as well. So any currently supported version of Java definitely has this available. And if you'd like to look at it, it's not very complicated, and it's a good example if you want to see a custom implementation and adapt it for your own needs. So the modern Tomcat support looks like this. Instead of having to implement a realm where you have to re-implement a lot of Java code, we have a new credential handler interface, and it has two methods in it: mutate a string and does this string match, which is the credential that was provided by the user when they attempted to log in, and the credential we grabbed from the data store, whatever it happened to be. So out of the box, we don't support other algorithms like bcrypt. A couple of reasons why not. We don't want to worry about licensing. We don't want any compile time dependencies. And it's so easy to do, you can do it at home. In fact, you can do it here. We also have something called a nested credential handler. And this allows you to support more than one credential handler at the same time. And this is what this is the part of this that makes the upgrades seamless, because you can implement a new algorithm that has higher priority, and then you can fall back to an existing algorithm. So if you're still using SHA-1 and you want to upgrade to something that's nicer, you just prioritize, let's say, PBKDF2, and if that fails for authentication, you can then fall back to the previous one. So you can allow your users, as they log in, to update their credentials to your new storage algorithm, but you can still allow people to log in using the old one. So I mentioned earlier, it's got a simple Java interface, matches and mutate. It's easy to implement anything you want, and because we have those two methods, you can both check to see whether or not your credentials are correct, and you can also implement the mutation function directly. And you can also you can use these objects directly in your application, which I'll show you in a minute. So it's pretty easy to configure. You'd usually have a realm if you wanted a Tomcat to handle your authentication. There's now a sub-element called Credential Handler. And in this case, what we've done is we have configured this to use the MD5 algorithm, which is exactly what the default algorithm and configuration would have been in previous versions. So if you do this, you will get poor security, but it will be compatible with our previous default. And again, just to be clear, this configuration is not recommended because it uses that MD5 hashing algorithm with no iteration, no salt. It's actually pretty easy to improve that security. All you have to do is add a salt and add a few iterations. Maybe you want to multiply that by 10. And that just that change can significantly improve the security of your password database. So for those of you who don't know, I'll just mention what a salted hash is. Instead of hashing the password that comes in from the user when they sign up, for example, you generate a cryptographic nonce, which is just a bunch of junk, and you prepend that to their password, and then you hash that. And the reason that you do that is so that a rainbow table is not possible. In order to compute the MD5 sum for every password that's reasonable out there, you can just run through them all. But if there's also a random amount of junk at the beginning of the password that is roughly equal to or larger than the password that people are going to enter, then that expands the problem much bigger. And so it's not feasible to compute every random password that might be 16, 32, 64 characters. Yeah.
What if the attacker captures your salt?
If the attacker captures your salt, they still have to brute force that one password. So that's a good question. It thwarts rainbow tables. None of this is going to prevent brute force. It's also worth pointing out that the salt must be stored in the database, essentially clear text. So if your password database is compromised, they will get all the salts, but they will have to individually break each password. So that means that instead of compromising your database en masse, all of your users, they would have to do them one at a time.
Chris?
Yeah?
Does increasing iterations help at all?
Increasing the iterations does help. The question is by how much? Because if I am running the hashing algorithm on my 7-year-old laptop, it may take it a few seconds to do, well, maybe not 10,000 iterations, but if I had to do like 1,000,000 iterations, it might take a couple of seconds. But if I am using like a cryptocurrency hash server or something like that, that is screaming through these things with a hardware implemented SHA-1 or MD5, it can go much faster than me. So that means that if I have cheap servers and my adversary has expensive servers, but my hashing algorithm has to work in real time, theirs doesn't. Because when my users log in, I have to do all this work. So if I do 1,000,000,000,000 iterations and the user has to wait 30 seconds from the time that they click login to the time that they can actually see the first page, no one's going to stand for that kind of garbage. So the iteration count is very sensitive to what I can provide as a service runner versus what an adversary could do. And that's why I said earlier that I was a little skeptical about just using MD5 or SHA-1 or SHA-256 with a bunch of iterations. A key derivation function is much better because it was designed for this specific purpose. Yeah?
If you change the salt, does that break everything? And why would you ever need to change the salt?
So if you change the salt, you won't be able to reproduce the password. So let me take a step back. When you enter your password, like super secret, you prepend the salt, and then you run the hashing algorithm, presumably multiple times, and then the result of that gets stored in the database along with the salt. When you do authentication, you do the exact same process, except rather than generating a random salt, you pull the salt from the database, and then you perform the same algorithm, and then check to make sure that the hash you computed on the fly matches the hash that you stored. So if the salt changes in the database for some reason, then the stored credential becomes invalid. There's essentially no way to recover from that other than doing some kind of out-of-band password reset. And it's also worth pointing out that every user has a different salt. So when you sign a user up or when they change their password, you should generate a brand new salt each time. That gets stored in the database and lives as long as that password is valid.
Iterations, wouldn't that be helpful though in that if an attacker gets your database, they don't necessarily know how many iterations you're running over it?
Yes and no. Depending on the algorithm, depending on the implementation of the algorithm, the iteration count can either be stored in the password, in the stored credential, just like you would store the salt. In fact, that's what our implementation does. We write the salt and the iteration count and et cetera, et cetera. The reason that storing the salt gives you a little bit of a performance benefit, storing the iteration count gives you a performance benefit because then you know exactly how many iterations to do. It also improves security, oddly enough, because I know this is very unlikely, but let's say that I had a 10,000 iteration count. If I didn't store the iteration count in the database, I would have to salt the incoming credential, hash it once, check to see if it matches, and I'd have to do that 10,000.
But if it was just a global configuration that wasn't stored
environment,
hashed passwords,
That is possible. However, when you want to change it, let's say you get a faster machine, then you're in trouble. So storing the iteration count is absolutely the right way to go. Even though it appears to lower security, it actually improves it. Because if I have to check to see whether or not the password I just hashed in the end iteration matches, I could get a collision when I haven't actually repeated enough hash iterations. That's very unlikely to happen, but with a 64 character, I've forgotten exactly how many characters you get from which algorithm, et cetera, but if you have a collision, it means that somebody could log in with the wrong password. Yeah.
But didn't you say previously that you can have multiple credential handles? So you just start with 10,000 and then you want to upgrade to 100,000, then you just add another one, and if you can't log in with your new credentials, then the whole one.
You could do that. You could do that, but let's say I have an order of magnitude difference between my new set of iterations and my old one. It means that to fall back, I have to spend, let's say, 10 seconds spinning on this one, and if it doesn't match, I have to fall back and spend 5 seconds spinning on this one. So there's a trade-off there. Does anybody else have any questions about the iteration?
Yeah, another question. Yeah. Not about iteration, but how about using application secrets? I mean, application secret, you wouldn't need to store it in the database, so if your database gets compromised, no one has application secret, and just use it to solve the password.
That's a possibility. I don't like applications having secrets for a handful of reasons, but I'd be happy to discuss that outside afterwards. All right. So let me back up to this example, since it's been a minute. So this is the MD5 algorithm, which is terrible. Adding a salt and adding a lot of iterations to it improves it, but this improves it a lot better. The secret key credential handler is very secure, and by default it uses the PBKDF2 algorithm, which I won't shut up about. There are other algorithms that you could use. That's why this is called the secret key credential handler and not the PBKDF2 credential handler. Any secret key algorithm that is supported by your JVM could be plugged into this, and there are some attributes that allow you to set the value of what that is. Let me see if I have an example here. No. If you look at the documentation for the credential handler, it will explain, especially for the secret key credential handler, it'll explain what other attributes are available to help tune these parameters or choose a different algorithm if you don't want to use PBKDF2 for some reason. So I alluded to this earlier. Looks like good stuff, but I have a password database that's got 100 million users in it, and we're all using this old crappy algorithm. So how do I fix things? How can I go from where I am to where I ought to be? And the answer is to use the nested credential handler, which I mentioned before.
There.
And then put two algorithms in there. The secret key credential handler is listed first, and I'll get back to that in a minute, so why that's happening. And then the message digest is the fallback. So if you have MD5 passwords in your database, you can still authenticate with them. But as users upgrade to a higher quality stored credential, they will be able to log in with them as well.
Can you force an upgrade? So when they log in, can you force them to generate a new password?
So that would be up to the application.
That's all the application.
Uh-huh. But there are some tricks that can help you. So I'll get to that in a second. And I want to mention that it is vitally, vitally, vitally important that you don't use plain text as a fallback. I hear people laughing at that, but if you had let's say you just had plain text passwords in your database. If you have plain text passwords in your database and it's a fallback, remember that if the password that the user is entering to log in does not match, it will fall back, even if it's not supposed to. And if you have, let's say, MD5 passwords in your database, and you also have the plain text as a fallback, it means that I can send in a hash as my password that I expect to match someone's plain text password, and it will, or not plain text, but it will match the hash rather than the thing that you're expecting it to be. So instead of, if my password is the word secret, you'd usually hash that and look for that. But if you're falling back to plain text, I can provide the hash that I know you have in your database for some reason because I've guessed whatever it's going to be, or I can brute force you. And so it's kind of a bad idea. If you happen to have plain text passwords in your user database, I would highly recommend that the first thing that you do is loop through all of them and replace their plain text password with a hashed password. Just a trivial hash, MD5, SHA-1, you can even run PBKDF2 if you have the whole plain text thing. But upgrade them first and then implement something like this. Never use plain text as a fallback.
That's a question that I had. Why would you have any in-between time between using two? Why wouldn't you just exchange them all at once?
So if you have plain text, you have that option. But if your users' passwords are already hashed, you don't know their values. So you can't upgrade them.
Oh, you'd have to reinforce your own.
Exactly.
It's a rainbow table.
Gotcha.
So, here's your question. That looks like great stuff, but all my users are still using these old passwords. How can I get them to change? And it turns out that we thought of this, and we make the credential handler object available to the applications through the application context. So you can pull that out of the application scope, and you can use it yourself. And the reason that that's nice is you don't have to figure out what algorithm is being used. You don't have to try to parse server.xml and find out what all the configuration options are and make sure that you get them right. And you don't have to mess with where am I putting the catalina.jar in my application so that I can do this. You can just get this, you can get a reference to this credential handler and use it. So your application doesn't actually have to know what the configuration it is. It just needs to use it. And it's worth pointing out, these are the version numbers where they're available. For those of you who can't read it, it's all of Tomcat 9 and 8.5 and 8.0.34, 7.0.70 and later. So it's been quite a while since it's in there, so hopefully everybody's on a version that is at or above those numbers. So this stuff is available right now. If you don't want to have a compile time dependency against Tomcat, which I don't, you can use Reflection to do the same thing. It's a little ugly, but this is how you do it. And you can still use them directly. It's the same effect with simpler dependencies, a little bit more complicated code. It's not that bad, but it gets the job done. And not having a compile time dependency against Tomcat is pretty good.
Chris,
yeah?
This may be your next slide, I don't know. Sorry if I'm doing that to you. Would you invoke this every time?
Every time what?
Or do you have, what's that?
Every time what?
Every time they log in, for example, every time they come in, are you going to update so that it ends up in the new store? Or do you have a way of knowing which handler?
No, Tomcat is not going to tell you, is not going to tell your application, hey, this person has an old school credential.
Right.
So that's going to be up to you to decide what you want to do in your application. Because you're right, you could preemptively.
At the time, you're doing a bunch of iterations.
Exactly.
You're checking it, and then you're storing it.
So which requires a repeat of all the work. Exactly. Yeah. So you could do it in two ways. You could, on every login, essentially regenerate the stored credential and save it. I wouldn't recommend that. You could also wait for users to change their own passwords, at which point you can update them. And the other option, which is what I would favor, is you can probably tell by looking at the stored credential whether they have an old one or a new one. Just based on the length or something about the formatting, I'm sure you can figure that out. For example, in my application, we can put users into a you must change your password on the next login state. So what I would do is say, if I have a swath of users who all have MD5 passwords, I would just put them all in that status. so that when they log in, they are forced to change their password through the normal password change mechanism that you would already have in your application, and then you do the credential upgrade one time. Cody, did you have a question? Just scratching, yeah, sorry. Yeah. Speaking of changing your password, it's often a good idea to confirm when you're changing your password that you are the person logged in who is supposed to be changing that. So the fact that your application can check whether or not a password matches, you can do that prior to upgrading the credential to say, you know, I've gone to my profile page, but I had my password stored in my my browser's autofill or something like that, or I have a really long session token that lasts a long time and somebody has walked up to my computer and decided they're going to change my password. Because the matches method is on that interface, you can double check the password, the old password, before upgrading to the new one. So the custom credential handlers will allow you to support currently unsupported algorithms and encourages you not to do all those bad things that I mentioned earlier. And it allows your credential handler to be plumbing code and not, or rather I would encourage you to have it be plumbing and not an implementation of an algorithm. Because if you're implementing an algorithm in the credential handler, you are probably rolling your own security. Don't do that. Use an existing library or something that the JVM supports. Don't roll your security, right. So I wanted to mention something. I'll do this because it's a little bit easier to read. I mentioned that if you have nested credential handlers, and I had two of them configured, the PBKDF2 was the one listed first, and the fallback algorithm was the MD5. When you execute this method on a nested credential handler, it will only invoke the mutate method on the first one. So the one that you have promoted to the top of the list, that is what new credentials will... that's the algorithm that will be used to mutate new credentials. So that basically means that as you upgrade, the new users or users who save new passwords will get the better algorithm. If you were to swap those things, you could downgrade if you really wanted to. Wouldn't suggest it. All right. I have 10 minutes, right? I'm just hearing the clapping. I'm a little worried about. Okay, great. Okay. So let's implement bcrypt. Remember I said that Tomcat didn't come with it? Well, if you copy and paste from this presentation, you can build your own. That's not true, because I leave a lot of like error handling and stuff out. But I have a zip or tarball, whatever. I have all the code online. You can get the slides and all the code from my apache.org page. So when I looked, there were two implementations of the bcrypt API for Java. They are essentially the same thing. It's just one of them's built with Ant, one of them's built with Maven. And I said, to hell with Maven, I'm going to use Ant. So all I had to do was choose a Java implementation, understand the API, which is like dead simple, and then write the simple credential handler class. There it is. That's it. I'm going to be very quiet for a minute because I know everybody's going to read it.
You're expecting us to find an error or something?
Nope. But that is literally it. I have a note down here. The credential handler has a few getters and setters that just map directly to the attributes that are on your XML that flow in, the number of iterations, they call them log rounds, and whether or not you want to specify your own secure random implementation or things like that. But that's the meat of it, and that's it. I mean, it's two lines of actual code. If you wanted to do this yourself, in sort of the old world order, you would have to re-implement your own realm and do all kinds of work, and this makes it trivial to check something else in. Configuration is easy. I want to use my bcrypt credential handler, and I chose 12 log rounds. I don't know why that's in there. That seems, oh, I think it might, it's called log rounds. I wonder if it has something to do with a logarithm instead of anything else. So maybe 12 is not just iterations, but in fact like 10 to the 12th or something like that. Tomcat will handle calling this for this. It'll turn that into a call into my credential handler for the setter that I didn't mention in the previous slide. And that's pretty much it. It's worth pointing out, when I did this test, I had forgotten to alter my database table so that the new credential had enough room to fit. Because I had been, for my test, I started with a database that had MD5 passwords in it, which is like 32 characters. And the bcrypt one is much longer. And so I got like a slew of errors when I tried to actually do this. So when you're planning on doing this, make sure that the credential handler that you choose to use is generating credentials that will fit into your table. Otherwise, expand the size. So that's how long the MD5 hash was, and that's the junk you get out of bcrypt. So this is the plain text. If you want to go on one of those MD5 reverse lookups, you'll find that this is the MD5 hash for Tomcat is the best, and this is what it looks like in the bcrypt format. So bcrypt was easy. It significantly improves the security of stored credentials. I forgot about this. This is something that I added. So bcrypt is great. You could theoretically think about adding any kind of hashing or other algorithm using this thing. But what's kind of more interesting is time-based one-time pads, which is something that I implemented like last week because I kind of got interested in it and I stayed up way too late at night. So since you can put these things together, even internally, you can use PBKDF2 and TOTP. For those who don't know what that is, it's a time-based one-time pad. And the way that it works is when you set up your account, and a good example is if anybody's used the Google Authenticator, that's what I'm talking about here. There is a one-time secret sharing process. So the server generates a secret and delivers it to you. In the Google Authenticator case, it shows a QR code on the screen. You snap it with your application, and that's the only time that the secret will ever traverse the wire. Once that's been done, the authenticator application, which is on your phone, you can do this on paper if you really want to, or you can write your own code to do it. Every 30 seconds, it gives you a new, essentially one-time number. It's only six numbers long, so it does repeat, but it's predictable, and the server knows what it's supposed to be at right now, and so does the client. So the token in flight can't be intercepted unless TLS is broken, and we're really hoping that's not the case. But SMS is broken, email is broken, all these other things can be intercepted. And because you're not having the server in real time send you the token that you then provide back to the server, that improves your security. So LastPass and Authy and other things like that, Google Authenticator I mentioned before, these mobile apps all support this exact protocol. And then the old school like secure ID tokens, it's the same thing, roughly. So my plan for the TOTP credential handler was I'm going to use a delegate credential handler for my usual authentication because I'm still not going to store plain text passwords. I still have a password plus this TOTP token. So what I plan to do is take the TOTP secret, put it in the database, and then put everything else after it that would have normally been put into that database. It's also important that just like the salt, you recognize that the TOTP secret, which was shared one time, must be in the database and it must be plain text. Because the user hasn't authenticated yet, you can't even encrypt it with their own password. There's all kinds of reasons for that. So Again, don't get your user database stolen, but if it is, well, they've already stolen your user database, so it's not. So the example stored credential would be, I have this prefix string, TOTP, a dollar sign, just because that's what is used in a lot of other places, the seed, which is the secret, another dollar sign, and then all the other junk that PBKDF2 or bcrypt or whatever else you're going to use had generated. So the stored credential for the password test with a salted single SHA-256 looks like this. TOTP, Tomcat, that's my secret for the TOTP. And then after the dollar sign over here, after Tomcat, is the rest of the junk that's there. And modulo a few details, this is what the code looks like to do this. So just doing string processing, and then I'll talk to, I got about a minute, so I'll tell you about this if anybody wants to ask, like during coffee break. Check the valid, grab a list of valid codes right for right now, and then check to make sure that they are correct. And then if the TOTP code is valid, then you invoke the delegate credential handler. Does this PBKDF2 password match the one that I have stored? Otherwise, thumbs down, user's not authenticated. And so when you log in using the username and the token, what you do is you put your username in, and then here's my TOTP currently valid token, followed by my actual password. And this is what the authenticator would show you. So you put those six characters plus your actual password into the password dialog box. No scratch again? All right. All right, so I guess it was about a year and a half ago, none of this was available. Maybe like 2 years, 3 years ago. Recent Tomcat versions allow you to do all of these things. A lot of the code is just plumbing, especially if you have a library that's doing all the heavy lifting, which is really how it should be done. But now Tomcat has support for all these things, which makes it a lot easier for you to implement these things yourself. You can plug in new algorithms. Your application can use these things directly without having to know the details of the implementation of the algorithm, as well as the configuration for the algorithm. And the stored password that you have for your users, it can be migrated to these higher security storage algorithms. So, you know, you guys asked a lot of questions along the way, but if anybody has any other questions, feel free to throw them at me now. Anyone? All right, let's have a coffee break or whatever's supposed to happen now. Thanks.